So the other day, I tried doing absolutely nothing. And I want to be specific about what I mean by nothing. No reading, no scrolling, no viewing anything, no intentional rest, not even meditation. Just sitting and doing nothing. So basically existing. I guess you could say forcibly inducing boredom. And this lasted about 11 seconds before I felt like I was being audited. Okay, in truth, it really wasn't that bad. It's actually fairly easy for me to do nothing because I've always had this rather unpopular habit of prioritizing free time over chasing money and materialism and so forth. But that feeling of being audited does still come up sometimes because, well, this is the world we live in now. I'm the type who's always needed a lot of time and space in order to function somewhat properly. However, I am fully aware that we do live in a society that does everything in its power to eliminate the possibility of boredom or free time, as you've probably noticed. I mean, I've noticed these days that stillness doesn't feel like rest anymore. It feels like you're falling behind. As if there's a counter running someplace and you're letting it get ahead of you. And you're not entirely sure what the counter is even counting, but you feel pretty certain that what you're losing, whatever it is. And I'm not quite sure when doing nothing started feeling like a moral failing in society. I mean, it's probably been this way forever because, the anxiety of the human condition more or less requires you to feel like you always have to be doing something. And of course, that usually means, especially in this day and age, consuming in some way or another. But it does seem to me that these days, this is worse. It's worse than ever because we're basically being worked and distracted to death. And the vast majority of people now have this low-grade inability to just exist in a room without also doing something in that room. Because every single minute has to be justified now. I mean, even your very existence has to be justified, right? And I think that's the part that has crept up on us. Rest used to be rest. We at least had that much, but now it has to be earned and it has to be documented. And of course, if possible, it has to be turned into content. Because, we live in these two realities now. And I don't think the reason this happened is necessarily personal. We're not all just individually weak-willed. I think we've been trained deliberately and very efficiently for reasons that I'll get into in this video. So, okay. Somewhere along the way, this whole busyness thing became a personality. And I don't mean that as a metaphor. I mean, people now lead with this, right? I mean, you ask someone how they're doing, and before they've even answered the question, they just tell you how busy they are. As if the busyness is the most relevant thing about them. And, being fully scheduled is like the same thing. It's the equivalent of being successful and, I guess, fully alive nowadays. And I get it, sort of, because productivity has become it's become identity. And it's become identity in a way that is pretty hard to overstate. Because what you do is who you are in our society. And if you're not doing something, visibly doing something, and measurably, preferably with some kind of output, whatever that might be, then the question of who you are begins to get a little uncomfortable. So there was a time when rest was something that you did so you could work. But these days, rest is something that needs justification before you're allowed to do it. And even then, it has to be the right kind of rest, purposeful rest with a, like a recovery metric attached to it so you can demonstrate that the rest was somehow productive. I saw something recently and I genuinely could not tell if this was satire. Someone describing their weekend as a dopamine detox with flexible parameters. Now, to me, that sounded like something a burned out robot would have said before collapsing face first into their standing desk. And, I wonder where this actually comes from because I don't think people are naturally like this, are they? I don't think that there's a like a factory setting on a human that's set to constant anxious motion, you know? I think that gets installed later on at somehow. And this happens within a culture that has spent a long time telling people that their value is inseparable from their output. So what's happening is the culture is feeding us this lame narrative that rest is a reward, not a right. And it's telling us that the person who sleeps 8 hours a night is leaving something on the table that the person who sleeps 6 hours has to pick up, which I find to be such a convoluted and manipulative implication. Max Weber wrote about this over a century ago, and his argument was that Western culture basically fused work with moral virtue so completely and thoroughly, going all the way back to Calvinist theology, that idleness, it didn't just become unproductive, it became sinful. What's that saying? Idle hands do the devil's work. And I think about that because it means that the guilt you feel when you're doing nothing, it's not really a modern invention. It's just been updated for modern times. So instead of the church bell, now we have the app notifications. And it's the productivity system instead of the confession booth. It's basically the same mechanism, but it's just different marketing or whatever. So nobody's putting a gun to our heads and forcing us to run this hard. At this point, we're doing this voluntarily because we've absorbed the logic of the system so thoroughly that it feels like we think it's our own ambition that's driving us, which is, I guess when you think about it, that's a more sophisticated form of control than anything that came before it. I mean, what's the point of a whip if people just do it to themselves, right? So the busyness, it's not entirely our fault. And I feel like that needs to be said before anything else, because otherwise this just turns into another one of those, you should manage your own, your time better. One of those lectures, which this is not that. Because look, it's not just you. There's something built around this, and it's constructed by a system that makes sure that you can never quite come to a full stop. And I think what's strange is this doesn't feel aggressive. Somehow that's I guess what it feels like, it's normal. And that's how you know it's working. So, okay, you sit down just for a second, just to breathe or something, and somehow that's the exact moment that your phone lights up. Not 3 minutes before or a few minutes after, right then. Like it's been watching you wait for stillness so it can interrupt it. Yeah. It's creepy, right? And then you open it, obviously, because of course you do. And now you're in the scroll zone, which of course doesn't end. And there's no place where it stops and suggests, all right, buddy, that's enough for you. Go be a person again. Because why would it? That would be terrible for business, right? So instead, it just keeps feeding you things. Just enough to hold your attention, but not quite enough to actually satisfy it, of course. And somewhere in the background, there's an algorithm that's been studying you for years. And it's figuring out exactly how to keep you in that state. Not quite overwhelmed or bored, just, I guess, slightly off balance, slightly restless. So you're engaged just enough so that leaving the situation feels harder than staying in it. And after a while, it starts to feel like it, like this is just how life is now. Like the constant motion is coming from you, even though it isn't. Now, the thing is, you're probably not that bad at focusing. It's just that you've been psychologically waterboarded by notifications since approximately 2009. And I think what really bothers me most about this is how deliberate it is. You know, there are entire teams of people, very smart, very well-paid people, who it's their job to figure out how to make sure you never put the phone down. Which is why now you're watching your phone while taking a shit. I don't think we really understand how invasive this really is on our lives. We've just gotten so used to this. I mean, it's somebody's job somewhere to make stillness and silence feel so uncomfortable that reaching for the screen feels like relief. Which it does. Because it's an addiction. And I find that to be more than a little disturbing. I mean, I see a fair amount of comments under my videos saying, well, there's two types in this regard. Either they're agitated by how slow I speak, so they watch the video on 3x speed or whatever. Or, and this group is much larger, thankfully, they're very appreciative of my slower pacing with the moments of silence and the sense of space and, you know, the lack of the jump cuts and all the usual stuff you see on YouTube videos. And I get the very strong impression that people are craving stillness and quiet, even if they're not really completely aware of it yet. So there is this interesting book written by Tim Wu called The Attention Merchants, where he traces the whole history of this. The way human attention became the commodity that the entire media and advertising economy is running on now. And his argument is that this didn't actually start with Silicon Valley. It goes back further than that. But what Silicon Valley did was it made it personal. So Silicon Valley made it something that follows you into every room of your life, including the bathroom, which is that's a level of access that previous generations of attention merchants could only dream about. And the thing about attention is that, you know, calm, settled, quietly satisfied people are terrible for engagement because nobody's making money off of you sitting in a chair feeling relaxed and feeling okay about your life. That's just a glitch in the system. And the system runs on the gap between where you are and where it says you're supposed to be. So this is the space between your life and the version of your life that you should apparently be living, according to their standards. And if you keep that gap alive, then you keep the scrolling alive. So the restlessness isn't incidental. It's the product. And, you know, personally, I find that actually somewhat clarifying in a grim sort of way, because it means the inability to sit still, it's not a personal failing. It's the intended outcome of an enormous amount of capital and engineering where you've been optimized for endless distraction, which doesn't really fix anything, of course, but it does mean the problem probably isn't you. Okay, if you haven't seen the film Perfect Days, there may be a few spoilers ahead here, fair warning. So there's a Tokyo-based film that came out in 2023 called Perfect Days, and the main character, a man named Hirayama, cleans public toilets for a living. And it's not a side hustle. He doesn't have a podcast about it. He doesn't have a morning routine video that he made called How I Optimized My Toilet Cleaning Workflow for Maximum Personal Fulfillment. He just has a full-time job cleaning public toilets. And then he goes home. He reads a paperback book, takes photographs of mostly trees with the film camera, makes coffee the same way he does every day, and then he gets up and, you know, he does it all again. And the film's not about him trying to escape this life. It's not about feeling bad for him. And it's not building toward some moment where he finally gets discovered or validated or something. The whole point is that there is no arc. There's just the days, the repetition, the present moment. So it's just a man who has somehow arrived at a relationship with his own existence that doesn't require constant renegotiation. And I find that deeply unsettling in the best possible way. Because the first instinct is to feel slightly sorry for him. Because you look at his routine and you can't help but to think, well, is this it? Doesn't he want more out of life? Shouldn't he have a 5-year plan or at least a LinkedIn profile where people can feel concerned for him, at least in a professional context? And the instinct, you know, that instinct, I think that's the tell. That discomfort with his situation is really the whole essay. Because what Hirayama has, and what I think a lot of people have lost without really noticing, is he has a life that doesn't need to perform itself. He's not curating anything. He's not optimizing anything. He's not measuring the morning against how the morning could theoretically be. He's just in it. Schopenhauer had this observation that human beings basically oscillate perpetually between desire and boredom. And that when we're not frantically chasing something, we are miserable from the wanting. But then, when we actually finally get the thing, we're almost immediately bored, and then we start reaching for the next thing. And, well, his conclusion was basically that most of human activity is just like an elaborate boredom avoidance process, which you might see as a pretty dark perspective, I guess, understandably. But, you know, have you been on the internet lately? I mean, what Schopenhauer said tracks. And I think about Hirayama in that context because he's essentially doing the thing that Schopenhauer identified as the hardest thing. He stepped off the oscillation somehow, and he didn't do it because he got everything he wanted. He just stopped the chasing. And I think that thing, well, I think the thing that makes his life look so strange to most people is his contentment with, you know, his contentment in spite of the toilet cleaning. I mean, we don't really have a framework for that anymore. Because in our culture, contentment reads as a sort of failure or delusion. And the gap, you know, the one that the algorithm depends on, contentment closes that gap. And a closed gap is bad for business. So instead we pathologize it. And we call it giving up. You know, lack of ambition and all that. And Hirayama doesn't seem particularly impressed with any of that, which already makes him more psychologically stable than most of the internet, in my opinion. So, all right, so here's the thing about slowing down. I think when you try to slow down in our society, it's kind of rebellious. I mean, it is rebellious, really. It's just you know, a non-confrontational version of it. Because in the attention economy, which is what we are in, and the whole architecture of engineered restlessness, these things require your participation to function. And every time that you just don't participate, something small but real happens. It's not a revolution or anything. It's just a withdrawal of consent that nobody really notices except you. And it feels insignificant, but it really isn't. There's a fear underneath all of this that I want to name, because I think this fear, it drives more behavior than people want to admit. And it's the fear that if you slow down, you'll just disappear. And that if you stop posting and you stop producing and, you know, being visible and active and engaged, people will forget you exist. Which, to be fair, some of them will. Honestly, most of them will. But here's the thing about that. They were already kind of doing it. Because the feed and the scroll moves a lot faster than you think. And trust me, you were never as present in anyone's mind as the algorithm would have you believe. Because visibility isn't the same as mattering. And I think we've spent a lot of time confusing those two things. Hirayama is invisible. He has no followers. Nobody's tracking his content calendar or analyzing his engagement metrics. He uses a flip phone. And he listens to cassettes in his car. And he seems perfectly fine with this. More than fine, actually. He seems, in my opinion, deeply content. Like he's someone who knows himself and knows where he is. He comes across as untethered and free in a way that most of us have lost or have never even known. I think very few people are living now without the toll that comes with our current technology. As amazing as the technology can be, we're also shackled to it. Our privacy is gone. Our identities are all being collected and analyzed and stored in, you know, some giant database somewhere where algorithms will determine our usefulness and our threat level to the system. And then, you know, we'll all be given a score. So I guess, what does any of this look like from a practical perspective? And don't worry, I'm not about to tell you to delete all your apps and you know, move into a hut in the mountains. As appealing as that does sound, that's, you know, really, that's just another kind of performance, right? I mean, the person who makes some big public announcement that they're quitting social media, I mean, yeah, they're still doing the thing, just with extra steps. What I'm talking about is something smaller and less impressive. I would call it small but mighty. And this is probably why it works. So, things like not filling every tiny gap. For example, the 2 minutes waiting for coffee where you'd normally reach for the phone. Just not reaching for it. Just letting those 2 minutes be 2 minutes. And I know it sounds embarrassingly, almost stupidly small. I get it. But it also turns out to be surprisingly difficult. And that should probably tell you something about the current state of affairs. Or, okay, how about just taking a walk with no destination? No 24-hour news cycle. No fitness tracker logging your effort, just walking, being a flesh and blood human, moving through physical space with no quantifiable reason. The establishment finds this sort of thing baffling. I find the establishment finding it baffling kind of funny, actually. And look, you don't have to, you know, disappear into the woods or wherever. You can just not open Slack for 6 minutes. Start small. Don't scare yourself. And don't scare the system too much either, because, you know, if too many people figure this out at once or do this at once, somebody in a very nice office somewhere is going to have a very bad quarter. And we wouldn't want that to happen, now would we? All right, so I want to come back to where we started. The 11 seconds of nothing, and that audit feeling, and how doing nothing immediately produced this low buzz of wrongness, like I'd violated some agreement that I didn't remember signing. And I've been thinking about what that feeling actually is, because I don't think it's guilt. I think it's closer to what happens when you've been running a program for so long that it stops feeling like a malfunction. Something inside you flags it and says, okay, this isn't what we do. Get back to the motion. Lao Tzu wrote about this in the Tao Te Ching. The concept of effortless action, or I guess more accurately, the wisdom of knowing when not to act. And the concept, it's not inertia or non-action. It's more like the intelligence of water. Water doesn't force anything, right? It just finds the path that's there, and somehow it gets where it's going. Which probably sounds like a profoundly useless concept if you have a quarterly report coming up or whatever. But stay with it. Alan Watts spent most of his life trying to explain to Westerners that the compulsive doing, you know, that we all are stuck in, the inability to just be somewhere without improving it or documenting it or, you know, extracting something from it. It was a kind of chronic anxiety that masquerades as ambition. Now, I'm paraphrasing here, but I think what Watts was saying is that we've confused the map for the territory or the menu for the meal, something like that anyway. I think we spend our lives eating menus and wondering why we're still hungry. Kiriyama isn't eating the menu. That's the whole film. And I find myself returning to that image because it represents something that I think most people have stopped believing is still available. That, you know, a person can just be inside their life without performing it, without the gap. So I'm just letting myself sit in a chair, looking out a window, watching a bird do something unremarkable in a tree. And yes, I've reached that age where I'm noticing birds now. I even have a pair of binoculars, God help me. But, you know, in doing this, I'm not having any breakthroughs or clarity. There's no problems to be solved. There's no urge to pull out my phone and capture it for the alternate reality. Nothing happens. It's unproductive and it's liberating. I think this practice of allowing yourself to sometimes just do nothing, it's almost a form of meditation without it being a meditation. I see it as a way to reconnect with your own personal humanity, because, you know, without our humanity, we're just a bunch of zombies, right? You get a few minutes here and there to be unplugged and untethered person sitting in a chair, looking at a bird or whatever, and the system has absolutely no use for that. Which, for reasons I'm still working out, I guess. And whatever the case, you know, it feels to me like exactly enough. No more, no less. All right. I believe that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening.